Hello and welcome to Tech Wrap, the podcast. We are online at techwrap.net. You can find us on Twitter, on the social media, Tech Wrap Podcast, and also email anytime. Our email address is mail@techwrap.net. It has been so long between podcasts, hasn't it, Will?
Hello, welcome. Welcome back, Geddes.
Welcome back to you. I mean,
it's been a little bit, but it hasn't been too long. I don't want to dwell on how long it's been, but I can say that it doesn't feel like it's been that long. It feels like just yesterday we were podcasting away in the studio. Maybe that's because I was listening to a lot of our podcasts recently and compiled a little bit of a best of.
Well, yes, you did all the work on the best of, and you mentioned to me something like in the space of 10 hours, you listened to many episodes of the podcast.
I think it was like 17, going back through them all and picking out the best bits that I liked. So it might have been a little bit biased, but I think I got a good sort of sample of what we do here. And if you are listening to the podcast for the first time, do make sure you go back just one episode and listen to the best of, and then you'll be completely up to date of seasons 1 and 2.
Like you mentioned, it's got the best bits. We sat down and had a bit of a listen to it, and I certainly did chuckle at a few things. And I'm not trying.
What was your favourite?
I'm not trying to be self-conscious in this one.
What was your favourite bit? If you had to pick one, I know it's hard, but
something
that stood out to you in a year and a bit of.
We're always a little bit childish sometimes, and being able to mix technology and innuendo in the one conversation can always be a bit of a chuckle.
Yeah, absolutely. But moving forward now, I think we're calling this one season 3. And are we starting it back to episode 1, or are we calling it 19 or whatever we're up to now?
Well, we'll call it 19 in the scheme of episodes. But
yeah,
of course,
okay, whatever the number is, we'll just keep going up.
We're definitely into season 3, though, of Tech Wrap, the podcast. And doesn't it feel good to be back together and doing this sort of thing?
I have been, we've been talking about it for a few weeks now, probably longer to get the podcast up and running, but it's been, I think, about 2 weeks since we really sat down and say, hey, let's bring this back and work on this as something, you know, we do every week. And ever since we did that, I've been looking forward to this day. And now that we're doing it, I'm looking forward to next week and the week after, because it was one thing, you know, I really did look forward to each and every week, and it feels good to be back doing it again.
And we are not going anywhere this time around.
No. Sticking around in for the long haul. Lots of plans for season 3. I know we talked about this. We want to bring on some guests on the show in the future. Some people may be coming out with some new tech, or some people that, you know, in the tech world, and we think they have interesting things to say and contribute to the podcast.
I've got a few up my
sleeves. Oh, really? Oh, excellent.
I definitely
looking forward to that. And another big change to the podcast, we've always had techwrap.net, but that was the main site for the podcast. But you've also been running a technology website for quite some time, trent.net.au.
I've been doing tech conversations for a little while now.
We've done something here.
We did. Well, because, you know, both of them surround technology, we've both wanted to get passionate in the scheme of things, and you are now writing some articles. So I decided that it was about time we merged the websites and put them all in the one easy-to-find spot. And that allows me to link people from my various radio conversations to the world of Tech Wrap. And that is, you know, the articles online on the website. It's also our conversations in the podcast. And they can talk to us nice and easy at techwrap.net as one go-to location.
Yeah, it's an all-stop shop for everything. So before we had techwrap.net, and then if you wanted to read tech articles, you go to trent.net and you'd promote that. But now everything involved in yours and our tech world, we can just point everyone to techwrap.net. You got the podcast, you got articles, you got all the latest tech news, everything you need to stay up to date with us and technology. What said it is your homepage, Geddes. It's my homepage.
It's already the homepage. What are you talking about?
Go around it at work and set it as the homepage and all the work computers.
I'll try.
And if you're listening to this,
very level best,
go around at your work and set it to everyone's homepage, because we should add like a little Google search bar to it, right, as well. And then that's all you'd need, TechWrap and a Google search, and then that's everything you need on the internet.
You can do those sorts of things, and you're in a one-stop shop.
All right, well, I think that about, you know, sums up where we're at. So let's dive into some tech. I know you've recently purchased a new to Australia. It's been around for a while, But you've recently purchased a new little tech toy, haven't you?
Yeah, we're jumping into the world of voice recognition and being able to use voice commands to be able to do stuff. Now, it's definitely not new with mobile phones. It's already been in there with, you know, your Apple devices. You've had Siri, and Google has also had their variant as well. The OK Google, Samsung, yes, are also working on some sort of technology as well. Bringing it into the home, though, in a device which is essentially a speaker and a microphone layout, which you can use to be able to provide voice commands. They've been active in the US. Amazon has had one for a little while. Google has developed their own variant called Google Home. And unfortunately, up until last week, we couldn't get it here in Australia.
What?
It means, you know, sometimes the vernacular of the Australian language wasn't necessarily detectable in the sense of you could actually buy one of these overseas and bring them into Australia and have a crack at them. But they finally released it in its fine, full functioning form here in Australia last Thursday. And I thought, well, you know, I've looked at these things for a while. I've seen all the conversations about them. I've read reviews of people playing with them. I want to bring this into my home because I think it would be a lot of fun. So,
so you're telling me that the only thing, because I feel like Google Home has been around for a while now, and you're telling me the only thing that was holding it back from being released officially in Australia was weird and funny accents.
And of course, all the integrations here in Australia. And the integrations here in Australia. I mean, things like being able to get news sources in and connecting to other services here in the country is also a challenge as well, because those sort of things wouldn't have been efficient had deals not been done in the country before. So,
yeah, there's probably all sorts of licensing agreements and all the behind-the-scenes stuff that it takes to get something like this up and running. A lot of the concerns people have with some of these devices, or maybe not a lot of concern, but a concern that has brought up is the fact that it's always on, always listening. How do you feel about having a microphone in your home listening to you do, you know, whatever that you do, and maybe you don't want it to listen?
Well, it doesn't...
At any point, maybe, right? They could somehow listen in to Trent.
Well, no, it's looking essentially for the command OK Google and the device.
How does it do that? It's always on, always listening.
But the device in its local area is listening for OK Google. It's not actually using it online. It's not connected online when it is searching for OK Google. There's only ever online activity when you say the words OK Google. However, there is a little button at the back which allows you to turn the microphone on and off, which I have actually done while we've been sitting here fiddling around. And essentially what it
so
does
you don't
is
accidentally trigger it.
Yes, so you can't trigger it at all. So I couldn't say OK Google right now and have it triggering.
But that's smart. That's thinking ahead, because you've been saying OK Google and it would pop up and try to listen, and then it would say, sorry, I could not understand that or whatever. Yeah, well, always one step ahead there.
So, yeah, it basically puts an indicator up using the four little indicators on the top panel to say this thing is muted. But so you've got the ability to mute it, but you've also got the ability to leave it on all the time until such time as you need it. Now, the unit that I've got, I've been using as a bedroom device. So traditionally...
What does that mean? That sounds a bit...
Well,
bedroom device.
Oh, you can take it however you like it. That even sounds wrong too. It's been sitting on a bedside.
Okay, Google, you can take it however you like it.
I'm sorry, I do not understand that command.
Don't play coy with me, Google.
It's been sitting on the bedside table at home, and essentially what it's done is replaced a clock radio, which I wasn't using...
Expensive clock radio.
Well, I wasn't using the clock radio, really. The light of the LED display on the clock radio was giving me the poops for so long. And the only thing I was doing when I was occasionally using it was plugging my iPhone into it. But because I've had so many iPhones since that clock dock came into my life, it doesn't run on the Lightning connector, and you have to have that adapter plugged into it, which makes a frustration because it doesn't fit into the case that I use for my mobile phone. So for some time, I've not been using the dock, and I've just been plugging the mobile phone in using your standard old USB cable.
So you've bought an expensive clock radio. You've had it for a little bit over a week now, you were saying?
It's not an expensive clock radio. It's a functional device.
Tell me some of the things that you've uncovered that aren't... Okay, maybe tell me, because all these type of devices, they normally have a gimmick, right? It's like, oh, that's a cool feature. You maybe show that off to a friend or something, but then you never use it again. So maybe tell us a gimmick you've come across that you think's kind of cool, but you don't really think you'll use it again. And then I kind of want to know what you found this most useful for. Like, what have you been using the most of it? Have you been like, okay, Google, set my alarm? Have you been using it as your alarm clock? What cool stuff can we do here, and what made it worth the purchase for you?
Yeah, I've certainly been using it for alarms. The other great thing I've been using it for is being able to, I guess, find out what's going on in the world, check weather and stuff. I mean, you can do the gimmicks here. We'll turn it on right now.
Yeah, yeah.
The mic's back on.
And we'll...
Oh, it even tells you.
It does. And we'll give you one of those gimmicks. So, okay, yeah. So the one that commonly gets used on demonstrations and the one that frustrated me a lot was the kookaburra. So, okay, Google, what does a kookaburra sound like?
Here's a kookaburra sound.
Biggest gimmick ever, right? I mean, it plays the sound of a kookaburra.
Can it hear me or no?
Well, it can't hear you, no.
Are there any other, what does it sound like?
There is other birds that you can ask it about as well. I especially...
Ask it, what does the fox say?
Okay, Google, what does the fox say?
Ring, ding, 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 a ding, and wop, pop, 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 a pow. Also, I've heard.
Also, I've heard.
So I imagine if I said that to my smartphone, it would give me the same response, right?
It would do the same response as well because it's in the command set.
Is the only benefit of having a Google Home the fact that it is a giant speaker? Like, is everything that Google Home could I do with my smartphone?
You can do some of the things with your smartphone. I guess one of the outstanding functions of having something like a Google Home is you only set it up once and you don't have to, I guess, have that device hanging around to be able to execute the commands. I mean, if it's sitting in a common space that you use here in your household,
yeah.
You know, like your lounge room or of course, like my situation when I go to my bedroom for an evening, to rest. I mean, I can just sit in that space and throw commands at it and it'll hear it and it'll, you know, execute those commands. And I haven't got any worries at all. So I can sit there and I can say, I've just bought the ability to plug a cord in. So like my lights, I've brought a switcher thing. So I can say to it, okay, Google, turn the bedroom lamp on.
No.
Okay, turning the bedroom lamp on.
And the bedroom lamp is on.
So wait, is that a physical cord or wireless?
It's a wireless connection between Google and the light.
Is it one of the ones that can change colours as well? Is it just a normal lamp?
No, it's just a normal lamp plugged in by a power cord.
You should get one of those Wi-Fi or whatever they're called, those MiFi RGB
wireless.
Yeah, those LifeX, and I know there's like some Chinese knockoff one as well. It's a lot cheaper that I see popping up all the time. That I'm so tempted to get. That'd be so cool. Could you imagine like having that in your room, and then you have the Google that's like, okay, Google, set some mood lighting, and then it like turns to like this reddish glow lighting, and then you're like, okay, Google, play some sensual music.
You can certainly do that, Google, but I mean,
get me my hand cream.
Oh, now you're getting kinky.
I imagine when I was saying what can the Google Home do over, say, your smartphone, the one that stood out for me was having it in a common area, a common space where many people can access, like in your living room or in the kitchen or something. You wake up in the morning, anyone can come out and go, okay, Google, what's the weather going to be like today? Or what's the weather tomorrow? What's the time? What's the latest news? What does a kookaburra sound like? What does the fox say? Set an alarm, set a reminder, like in the living room, remind me to get milk or something like that. That is kind of cool.
Yeah, it's definitely a great feature. And while I can't remember the command as well at the moment, you can basically say to it as well, you know, to give me a bit of a rundown, and it'll tell you, you know, what you've got in your calendar, what the temperature is today, and going to each of the news sources that you have available to you. So you can actually find out, you know, what is going on around you before you get started on your day, essentially. So that's a great little function. Reminding me, I've got to turn that light off again. Okay, Google, turn the bedroom lamp off.
You got it. Turning off the bedroom lamp.
Now just
you got it, boss. I love like the cheerful optimism of the Google voice.
The mic is muted.
You got it, boss. The mic is muted. So you're running a Google Home. Does this mean you're one step closer from next thing you'll be doing is purchasing an Android device?
No, not at this point in time.
I've heard rumors of the new Galaxy Note 8 being announced soon. August, I believe. They're having a conference, and it's very much expected for the Note 8 to be revealed. We've all forgot about the exploding Note 7s, right? So the Note 8 will be smooth and nice.
Some of us have forgotten about it. I've certainly remembered the fact that they've been repackaging those old exploding phones and giving them to Chinese people.
Special, and they rebranded it and they called it like Special Edition or... fan edition or something like that.
The fan edition.
Literally, a Galaxy Note 7, but the only change is on the back it says fan edition. And obviously I think they fixed the battery. But I think it's just one of those things where it gets hyped up in the news and then stuff. But you bring a new shiny toy in front of everyone and everyone forgets about everything previously. And everyone's going to be all over it, no doubt. Even me. I'm due for an upgrade.
You're due for an upgrade.
I'm going to think about it.
You're not contracted.
No, I can change any time, and, you know, I've got a little bit of a dint. I've dropped it. You know how careful I am.
Well, reasonably careful.
And I don't rock a case. You don't rock a case either, do you?
I do rock a case.
Yeah, I don't. So I enjoy the beauty of the phone for the life of the phone. Mm. I think the only way to enjoy that beauty and the feel and the slimness of it and just everything is not to have a case. Now, that does come with some downfalls.
It does. You can drop it. You can break the screen.
Or scratch it or put it down. But I had it for over 2 years now, and this is the first time I dropped it, and it was such a silly drop as well. I was just walking to the airport, and I was tired. Stayed up late, and I just pulled my phone out to check the time, just out of my pocket. I had my phone in my hands, and it just slipped out, and then hit the concrete. So I mean, it's not like I was being careless or anything. It was just a silly thing, and it lasted over 2 years. So I think that's not. I'm not going to be worried about if when I do get a new phone to buy a case like that hasn't put me off. You know, I can't get the trade-off of experiencing the beauty, because the phones today are so beautiful, Gettys. They make them with like the infinity display, the hardly any bezels. It's so slim and sleek in your hand. It's too beautiful to be shackled in a case.
Well, yes and no. I mean, you know, I like to see a little bit more use in the mobile phone than 1 to 2 years. I mean, you know, the cycle
Wait,
of...
what's your average turnover? You get a new phone every year. What are you talking about? Don't you normally upgrade on the...
Just hold it out on me. so I might turn over my phone every year, but essentially what I can do, you know, depending upon my circumstances, whether I've got a contract or not, if I decide after a year and I'm not contracted, I can go and put this phone on eBay and I can be guaranteed before the next model phone comes out that I've got a resale value which is at least $500, if not more. So to not break the phone means I can have resale on my mobile phone and have no worries at all. That's why I have a case. That's why I have a screen protector. If you're looking at a mobile phone as, well, its expendable life is 2 years, so it's going to be stuffed after 2 years, I suppose there is no issue in the fact that you break the screen or you dent it or something.
Do you know what I do?
What do you do?
With my phones, I don't really think about... I guess I could resell, but it's a lot of effort. But what I normally do is I hand my phone down to my brother.
Does your brother like that?
He isn't really one to purchase. I mean, he doesn't really care about phones too much, and he didn't have a smartphone until I gave him my old my Note 2.
Oh, he had a dumb phone.
So he had this old crappy phone, and I was getting the Note 4, and I think it was still good. And I think I owed him some money or something, so I was just like, here, have my Note 2, and all debts are cleared.
Oh, you're a cheap shot.
And what happens, like, over the 2 years, you know, as siblings do, they might buy you things or you might take things of theirs, like a T-shirt or whatever. So me handing my Note 4 down to my brother is a way of clearing my debts. from the past.
I suppose it's a reasonable way of looking at it. If he can make use of it and it's not stuffed to the point that he's got to spend money on fixing it.
Yeah, do you know what? But actually, it was about a few months after I gave him my note too. He went overseas, and then he ended up dropping his phone and completely smashed the screen. And he's still been using it since. So he's got a completely... He smashed my phone, which I had taken good care of it for 2 years. And then he had about 2 months and he dropped it. I don't think he was used to the delicateness of a smartphone. He's just used to chucking around phones all the time. So I'll be giving him this phone to get him away from his old crappy... his old... smashed up screen, but it's got that little bit of a crack in the corner. You've seen it, that little bit of damage. It's nothing too crazy, but I wish I could have handed a nice new phone to him, but this is the best he's going to get. Well, I think the Note 8 will be the one I get.
You've never handed him a nice new phone, just be honest.
I did. My Note 2 was beautiful. It was beautiful.
But it wasn't a new phone.
It was really well... No, it wasn't brand new. She's not giving him a new phone. Give me a break. Even the best brother in the world would get him a brand new phone.
Yes, well, yeah, I haven't got that sort of money to throw away, especially given the fact that I've been on contracts. I'm that silly guy who signs up for a 24-month contract, but I use that whole thing of, it's a campaign where I can take it in after 12 months as long as it's in decent condition. That means you can't crack the screen, you can't put big dents in it, although I have got a little rub mark at the bottom of it, but I think it will pass because it's so tiny, that they wouldn't even... notice what has actually happened.
I can't be locked because there's always new mobile plans coming out and that are giving you better deals. Well, it's funny now, the standard is unlimited call, unlimited text, right? So the only way now anyone can compete with each other is in the data category.
It is.
Remember back in the day, it used to be $650 worth of calls.
Yeah.
$800 worth of calls, unlimited text. Now it's just unlimited text, unlimited calls is the standard. And the only way now to stand out is with reception and data. So there are always new plans coming out for cheaper with more data, and I jump on those. I can't be restricted that. I move around too much.
And I noticed actually Telstra is really upping their game in those sorts of things. They've got a BYO plan at the moment, which has just come out in recent weeks. 12-month plan, you get 12 gigabytes of data and unlimited calls and texts for $50 a month. Now,
that's pretty good.
If you have a listen...
Hashtag not sponsored by Telstra.
No, we're not sponsored by Telstra at all. I'm just pointing this out because I happen to be a Telstra customer and I've been there for a while. And the reason is because we live out in the country and I live a bit more remote than you. So I need to be able to make a phone call in the middle of two towns and not have an issue. So that's my opinion for being on Telstra. So
that's really good, though. So
someone can get a 12 gigabyte plan and unlimited calls for $50 a month. In the past, I've been on, say, 100 plus for 12 gigabytes.
And so you can't switch over to this plan because you're on a contract, right?
I'm currently contracted, so I can't switch.
Are you going to get off when you end? Are you going to get out of this contract madness?
To end this contract, I would have to sit out for another year.
Oh, you got another year on it before you can move around. Well, after this year, do you reckon you'll go postpaid from now on?
I'm thinking about my options because there's so...
A year is a lifetime when it comes to, tech and the phone plans.
You know what I haven't changed so far? It's so easy to be able to get a new phone when you sign one of these contracts. So
they want to keep you, that's why.
And I'm a technologist and I don't want to pay full price for some things sometimes.
If it works for you, then...
Yeah, you end up jumping on a plan and it works for me. I've been able to continue on through the year, although I'm starting to get to that point where I go, well, is it really worth the $100+ the phone plan is for what I'm getting? I've got a lovely phone, but things have gone on. And
do you ever get those people calling you up and ask, and they're like, "You have been selected. Congratulations for a brand new special offer mobile plan," and then they try to sell you a new plan?
I used to get people reviewing my contract options in the past, but I just told them
from Telstra, but not from other companies.
No, these were resellers of Telstra. And I said, I'm all good with my options. I understand.
I got a call today. A phone call. And normally when you see a number you don't know, you kind of don't. You're like, should I answer this?
Yeah.
I kind of had a feeling it might have been one of those. And I was like, I'll just roll with it. So I picked it up. And he's like, congratulations. You've been selected from Optus phone bank or whatever. Because I'm not with Optus, but I'm on the Optus network.
Yeah, definitely.
He made it out like I was winning some big prize. Like, I don't know if he says this to everyone. He's like, congratulations, you're so lucky. Congratulations again. And then he's like, I'm going to offer you an amazing deal for unlimited calls, unlimited text. And I think it was 12 gig of data. And he's like, are you happy with your current phone plan? And he doesn't tell me the price per month until he asks me my plan. And I was like, yeah, I'm pretty happy. It's like unlimited calls, unlimited text, like 10 gig of data, $40 a month. And the second he heard me say $40 a month, he's like, and he's like, oh, you're happy with the reception and stuff? I'm like, yeah, it's good. I've never had a problem. He's like, oh, okay. Thank you for your time. Bye. And I've got this quite often where people try to sell me plans and I tell them what I get for how much a month. And then they're like, oh, okay, bye. Because he didn't tell me how much his was, but I feel like it would be maybe 50, 60, definitely more expensive because you got nothing, right, at that point. You're like,
yes,
I'm going to offer you an Optus plan.
I run this script by everybody.
Yeah, exactly right. But it's just funny, like, you find a good deal and then people try to call you and tell you about better deals and your deal's better. So, I mean, that's one of the perks of.
But they're always going to sell it positively.
Yeah, and they don't tell you the price.
One of our biggest telcos has always been involved in a tactic with mobile telesales, and I've had it happen to me as well. They'll go, oh, you know, we'll give you a free phone with this brand new contract, da-da-da-da-da, and you go, oh, yeah, oh, that sounds all right, we'll go for it. And essentially what happens is the package arrives in the mail a day or two later and you find that the phone is a fully contracted mobile phone and you're going to be paying for the mobile phone regardless. So
locked.
As soon as you get that in the mail, you go, ooh, not into this. They've been lying on the phone, and you send it back because you've got 30 days to be able to decide whether you want it or not, and you've essentially been conned.
Do you know, yeah, so I think the thing is never ever go on a contract. Always buy your phone outright and then source your own contract yourself.
Well, this is
that's my opinion.
This is if you can afford to do so. I mean, if you find
the
option,
you have to buy the phone outright. Yeah.
If you find the option of contracting for a phone easy enough, I mean, you can certainly do it. There are some good contracts out there, but you have to do a lot of research. There's no point going into a mobile phone shop, whether it be just an independent or some of the brands, and going, what can you do for me? Because they will try and sign you up to almost anything, much like...
That's why you just buy online. Yeah, find a place online.
But you can do it in shop, but you've just got to be savvy. You've got to research all the plans that are available and find out what might work best for you, and then walk into them and just hit it to them and say, this is what I want to do. I've picked out this plan. I've picked out this mobile phone. Can we do it? And they can do it from there. And that means that you'll be getting an option which works well for you. It's a good old case in point of people who don't bother renewing their internet contracts. they sit out a 12 or 24-month contract, and then there's brand new offerings from then on, and they're cheaper than what the plan already is. And
I remember there were some articles a few years ago of people still being in charge for dial-up plans that they didn't know that they were on dial-up internet plans.
Because they just never cancelled. That's what happens. And that's how
Netflix gets you or any online subscription. They're just like, here's the free trial, and then they get your credit card and then you don't watch it for a while. I think weren't you on Netflix, or you're thinking about canceling it now because you're never watching it?
Yeah, we're still on Netflix, but it's not being used as often as it should. But the case in point of what I speak of is friends connected to various large ISPs, and they've gone beyond their contract, and then they're going, oh, you know, I see this option for X amount of gigabytes for this amount of money, and they haven't contacted me about it and said, do you want to change? And it's like, well, no, mate, you've actually got to do that yourself. The service providers will always continue to take your money regardless of what brand new fandangled options are out there.
Well, I feel like it's getting more expensive. I think this is going to be ridiculous, and it probably won't be until the end of the year till I get a new one. But do you know what one thing I hope doesn't come with the Note 8 that came with the S8 or S8 Plus?
Non-removable connections?
I'm thinking like about the dedicated button on the side of the phone that activates Samsung's voice assistant, Bixby.
Bixby.
That, did you know that was a dedicated button?
I do remember reading
on the
about
S8s,
this. Yes,
and, the S8 pluses.
And there was
and then
a little bit of
didn't want to use Bixby because it was crap and it didn't work properly, and they wanted to remap that button to something else. And then they could do it for a little bit, and then Samsung were like, "Hold on, no, you can't do that." And then they patched it and then made it so it's always a Bixby button. Dude, how cool would that be to have a dedicated button on your phone that you could map to any app on your phone to instantly open
but
it. That's a cool thing, right? That's a cool feature.
Yeah,
like, have it on the default for Bixby.
The phone manufacturers don't want you
change it.
The phone manufacturers don't want you to do that.
Yeah, because they want you to use their voice assistant. And you were talking about Google Home and other voice assistants out there like Siri. Bixby is Samsung's one. And recently, I read an article on techwrap.net that it is now officially released. Bixby, Samsung's voice assistant. Previously, it was in an opt-in beta and then a beta because they were still kind of gathering. They say they were like bug fixing and optimizing, and but really gathering a lot of the user data, that what people were saying to the phone, how it interacted with it, gathering all that, you know, that big data that they can use for the final release. And they got to the point now where they are confident enough in Bixby's abilities as a voice assistant to release it to the world, to everyone, say, hey, it's out. So if you have an S8 or an S8 Plus, it'll be now on your phone. It'll probably update on the App Store. If you don't have it, you can download it now and it should work. Now, the question is here, what makes Bixby different to, say, Google Assistant, right, which is also on Android phones?
And it's all down to the brand.
Google Voice, which is what you're using right now on your Google Home. But what can Bixby do here? Now, what I could see, and they're like on their launch video and what I've been reading, is the Bixby can access your phone settings. So you can go deep into your phone settings with your voice. So an example here is you could say, hi, Bixby, set my phone brightness to 50%. And then it will automatically set your phone brightness to 50%. Any option deep in your phone that you could set with your finger, you can tell Bixby to activate, turn on, turn off, adjust, which is kind of cool because Google Assistant can't go that deep into the phone settings. And being a Samsung phone, a Samsung voice assistant, they have the ability to do that, which is really cool.
There's thoughts now, where this can be practical and impractical as well.
And one of the cool things I saw was you can just say, hey, Bixby, show me my last photo taken. And then it will just bring up your last photo taken. That's kind of cool. And then you can say, hi, Bixby, post this to Facebook. And it will automatically post this to Facebook.
It is neat.
You can do one better and you can go, hi, Bixby, post my last picture to Instagram. Hi, Bixby, post my last picture to Facebook, Twitter, wherever.
You can do some of this on the voice recognition technology already.
Really? To that level, though?
With a social media
last picture.
Yeah. With social media posting.
With your phone being on your home screen. No, not in any picture, nothing. Just say, my last picture. I don't think you can do that with any other voice assistant, right? You can't do that to your iPhone.
I can't do it on my iPhone, but then again, I guess they haven't explored those options so far. They've been working on refining
the pattern. Yeah, I feel
like
they could expand upon that, and especially Google being built into Android, which is on all Samsung phones, right? They could probably get to that point if they wanted to as well. But from what I've been seeing, this is the only advantage Bixby has over Google Assistant, is accessing the phone settings. Everything else you could use Bixby for. Sure, you could use it as an internet search or whatever you wanted to say. Hi, Bixby, how tall is... Hi, Bixby, who's the Prime Minister of Australia? Okay, or something like that. It'll tell you how tall someone... Basic information it'll pull up for you. But sometimes it doesn't work. And do you want to risk that where you know Google Assistant will get it every time and has access to more information? And how often would you be changing your settings with your voice anyway when you can just pull down your quick notifications and adjust your brightness or your settings?
Ultimately, so you're not going to do it all that often.
Yeah, exactly right. So I'm just like, this is a cool thing, I guess, that they're working on it, but... Do you remember S Voice at all? Well, you didn't have an Android phone,
but I've been around these technologies in the past. So S Voice has been around.
A complete.
I did understand S Voice, but you know, no one was into that sort of thing back then, and no one had done the extensive work that they've done now on voice recognition technology. So people are adapting to it now more so.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, why would you use Bixby over just the Google Assistant?
Yes, definitely. Why would you use Bixby when it's being developed by one manufacturer, whereas, you know, something like Google Home or even you know, Siri, it is being adopted by one company, but I mean, it's a platform where other companies can work together and advance the projects. And of course, all the users that are using it can contribute to it as well to make sure it starts to work better than it has been and be something really functional, you know, moving forward in the future.
I just don't see myself ever wanting to use Samsung's voice assistant over Google's when I know Google's is better in just like every way. So I don't know, maybe that is a button on the side of the phone dedicated to a voice assistant that I'm never going to use enough to put me off buying a Note 8.
But it's probably not going to put
you
off.
Maybe one of the Google Pixel phones or whatever they are, the Google Pixel 2 or...
Let's be positive on the situation. It's probably not going to put you off because there are, you know, other features, tens of other features that you're going to like in your Samsung phone. And that's the reason why you've been buying them before.
A phone that you'll never use as well.
That's what you've been buying before.
Samsung like to pack their phones full of useless things that you're never going to use.
You've been buying them before and you're always going to buy them. Yeah, well, yeah, who uses Iris? But then things like the fingerprint scanning, I've adopted to that and I'm using it and I love it, you know. And I've got a phone now which doesn't actually have a physical home button. It's just it reacts with a taptic feel which makes you think it's a button. And it's just a control surface essentially. And
I was reading that I think it was Samsung. They were working on a fingerprint scanner built into the actual touch screen, so you don't even need a sensor.
But is that very practical? I guess you have to sort of think. Well, whereabouts?
You just put it where the home button would be.
Yeah, whereabouts?
Or maybe you could put it. Imagine if you could put it anywhere on the lock screen and it would pick it up.
Whereabouts on the home screen is it going to be? How functional is it going to be? What sort of things can impede it?
I imagine, like, to start, maybe they'll just have like a square box, right, on the lock screen. It's like place your thumb here.
Possibly.
And then you just place your phone in the box, and that should be easy enough. But I think I was reading that they were hoping to launch it with the Note 8 or something like that, but they had a lot of technical issues and stuff, so it probably won't be in maybe next year, if at all. But it's something that it's probably that experimental thing. But that's cool, and I don't see why that wouldn't happen in the future. Just have it on your lock screen, and maybe start off with a box, and then just anywhere on your phone screen, you can just put your thumb, and it unlocks it. Although that might be a bit dangerous, accidentally unlocking your phone when you like pull it out of your pocket or something.
Very, very dangerous.
I hope they get rid of the Bixby button. I hope they allow you to remap it, and they get rid of all their bloatware and junkware, like Microsoft are doing, I hear.
Well, Microsoft are doing some significant software updates for Windows 10 because Windows 10 is the centerpiece now. Support is getting closer to ending for Windows 7. If you've been following how things are going on with various operating systems, the thing that has brought surprise to the world over this week has been the news that some applications are being phased out with coding changes in Windows 10. They think these things are just getting a bit too old, long in the tooth. One of those such apps, which was started in 1985 and has gone on solidly until now, is the humble old Microsoft Paint. It's clocked up 32 years in the game, and now it's time to say some form of goodbye to it.
What do you mean, some form of?
Well, some form of
it's
goodbye.
It's not gone forever, is it?
It's not completely gone. There is an application replaced it called basically Paint 3D, and it's the more modern variant of the application, and it's on a newer code set. The original version of Microsoft Paint, they do say after people came out and went, oh, Microsoft Paint is gone, we can't have this, or, you know, rest in peace, Microsoft
Paint. How do I live?
Yes, like that. They actually come out in a statement and said, it's not disappearing completely. You'll be able to get it on the App Store, but it won't be included within your main installation of you know, Windows. But that's a good thing because that's the beginning of people learning to adapt to all the newer software out there because old software can't go on forever and it can't be supported in its full form. It's only one of a few applications that are being phased out. Outlook Express is also disappearing as well. Gone are the days where people were using the included, email software to be able to check their email messages. And a few of the other changes, there's more than a dozen of them, but they're more, settings within the application of Windows. And they're on the article that we posted online at techwrap.net. They're more technical things. They're things that administrators would know more of. They'll just delete a few things. Also, screensavers are disappearing as well because, let's face it, there's not many people who have problems with screens being on indefinitely and screen burn and all those cases like you had with the big old hunky tubes or even plasma TV screens, for instance.
Yeah, the old CRT monitors. That's something, honestly, until you mentioned screensaver, I hadn't thought about a screensaver in, man, many years. That's something you don't, that was around and now it's not a thing anymore. That's screensavers. What's a screensaver? Yeah. Tell any like millennial that. It's like, what are you talking about? You mean Google homepage or like Netflix? Is that a screensaver?
they're still there. They're still in the theme settings. You can get into the right area to set it. And I have screensavers on a couple of machines, but they don't get used all that much anymore. Take case in point, in a workplace, they've got policies set on our laptops at work, which mean they go into standby overnight. So hence no need for screensaver because the only time the screen is on is between that time that you're using it. So if you're rocking up at 9 o'clock in the morning and leaving at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and you've been in front of the machine most of the day, I mean, the screen will be on, but when you walk away for lunch, for instance, it'll go into standby as well. So there's no damage to the screen like in the days of CRT monitors, where if you left stuff on for more than a couple of hours, started leaving marks in the screen. And if you left it there for long enough, those marks just wouldn't disappear at all. And it's all, old junky code, which is bogging down the operating system and possibly causing, more potential security risks if there are people who can expose flaws in the code as well. So it's easier to get rid of it than to keep it.
Actually, do you remember, speaking of like image burn-in, do you remember when I left, there was some color bars on my screen at the office overnight or over a weekend or something? Then it burnt into the monitor. Do you remember that?
Yes,
and
we were trying
to get it out of it.
I do.
Maybe a screensaver would have saved me there. Hopefully no one noticed that.
Well, it would have.
No one's listening.
Why you had colour bars, but then that was an older LCD as well, that particular one, and it was more it was more of one of those TV production monitors as well. So,
well, I'm glad that paint isn't gone for good, because when they first came out with it, it kind of sounded like we're getting rid of paint. And then everyone was like, "What? You can't get rid of paint. Paint's the best." And then they came out and they said, "Oh, wait, we're stopping support for it. You can still download it in the App Store."
But we encourage you to use 3D paint in the meantime, because that is in your application. It's the same thing.
What are you going to use 3D paint for?
Exactly what you did in normal paint.
Really?
Yes, definitely.
So you can make 3D images and stuff in it. Why are they calling it paint 3D?
Because it can do that and much more. That's the idea of it.
All I use MS Paint for was to crop an image and save it really quickly. And maybe draw like a stick figure drawing or something like that with the sun in the background. I think everyone has a fond MS Paint story. But
we've all got memories of what we used it for, yeah.
That's because we've been around since the beginning, right? And we've always had paint there. And now paint isn't there now. It's kind of a big shift, but moving forward, right, the next generation, you just don't have paint there and they're none the wiser.
They'll be none the wiser because, versions of Photoshop in its form, they have elements, so that works for the budget user. Then you have the full Photoshop. There's education editions so that they, don't have to pay all that much for it. And then there's things like paint.net. Is it paint.net now? Which is essentially like Photoshop, but it's a free version of something. And you don't even have to have a look at paint when you've got that functionality out there. And there'd be lots of people who are younger than us that just haven't experienced what we have with that particular software and wouldn't hold any connection of that form with it.
Yeah, paint.net's a great free alternative. And also GIMP is a great Photoshop alternative.
The GIMP, it's been around GIMP for a long time.
A long time. And it's I haven't used it in a long time, and I feel like more people should use it than they do. But Adobe just make Photoshop the staple across the entire industry, and they've got such a monopoly on it. But yeah, if you can't afford Photoshop, definitely give GIMP a go.
Yes,
Geddes, I got definitely. Some. I got some other bad news that happened this bad last news? Week. Yeah, I know we briefly talked about you not really using Netflix that much and subscriptions going on and catching you out. Netflix price has just been increased. Well, we knew it was going to be increased for a while, but I just got my email the other week letting me know that my monthly subscription cost is going up by $2 from $11.99 to $13.99.
Now,
can you believe it?
This is the government GST thing, isn't it, that come into play?
Yeah, do you remember, like, they dubbed it the Netflix tax because something everyone can relate to and is probably the biggest offender of importing digital content to this country. And they're like, wait a minute, you're not paying tax on this. They're like, wait a minute, how do we get money from this? More like the case. So, yeah, I think it's been in talk for maybe over a year now or something, but it just came to effect the 1st of July, where they're imposing a 10% tax, very similar to GST on everyday goods and services, to now online content, which is, I don't know how to feel about it. I feel like as a consumer and as a taxpayer, I feel a little ripped off, Geddes.
Well, you probably shouldn't feel ripped off because if the situation had been there in the past, I mean, you would be none the wiser. And I can see to some degree their case in point in the idea of introducing some sort of a GST for these people who are providing services and not necessarily paying tax. But I am disappointed in the fact that it tends to be always us and we've always got a higher cost to be able to access any of these services as well. And also, yeah, you know, factoring in things like exchange rate, depending upon what sort of service you're getting. But things like Netflix and those other streaming services, of course, have to collect money in the Australian dollar. So you're not going to have that as an issue. But you certainly find that when you do buy stuff like, for instance, on eBay or something, or through a gateway on PayPal, for instance.
Yeah, and I think next year they're going to expand upon that to all those other services. So you might be paying more on eBay now, paying the GST regardless whether or not the item's over $1,000 or not, where previously if you got an import and it was under $1,000, you didn't pay a GST on it. Now if you do, you will pay. But with the Netflix thing, I mean, I say I feel a bit ripped off and maybe a little bit like any time a price goes up in something that you're paying for and you had before, it's a change. It's like catches you off guard and stuff. But at the end of the day, it's like $2 more, right? So, and I'm actually surprised they hadn't increased it before then. Apparently, this is the first price rise in Netflix since they launched in 2015.
It is.
So it's been over 2 years, and the wealth of content and original content on Netflix has just expanded and continues to expand. And that was another reason they kind of justified the price rise, saying that, you know, they're working on new improved features in Netflix. They're producing more and more content for you. So, I mean, I think they were due for a price rise, but it just sucks that it sort of came forced almost with the Australia tax. And they actually increased it a little bit more. It's not just the 10%. It's actually a little bit closer to 20%. So they kind of took this opportunity to go, oh, we have to increase the price anyway. Let's bump it up a little extra and do, not instead of two price increases over, say, the next year or two, let's just bump it up for the next year or two. The highest subscription is $18 a month, which is the premium. You get 4K. But the one I'm on is the standard. It's only $14 a month. And I think for what you get out of it, the amount of entertainment and quality programming, in my opinion, is worth $14 a month.
And how many people are buying the top-of-the-line subscription plan at this point in time? Because 4K TV, they also need a very good internet connection, a very strong, say, NBN connection to be able to access it. And many of us are not in that boat. I mean, I don't even have a 4K TV. The last time I got a TV was something when I was able to be a part of a reviewing scheme, and 4K wasn't even out then. LED TVs were the rage then, and this thing is affordable. 47-inch TV, but I like it, and it does what I need it to do, and it can do 1080p, and that's all that matters. So, you know, that basic Netflix subscription is good enough for me, although I don't watch a lot of content. That's the reason I want to cancel the thing, though.
So you're only paying $10 a month, but, yeah, if you don't use it, cancel it. Otherwise, they'll keep increasing the price and catch you out.
They will, and they'll keep catching me out, and I've already been caught out with things so far. I jumped on another subscription system to test it with Chromecast, and I forgot about the fact that it reached a month before I even logged into my account, and I got charged the full subscription cost. That hurt just a little bit.
That's how they get you. Well, to balance out the sad news, I kind of got some good news as well.
You've got some good news. Tell us the good news.
Are you a fan of virtual reality?
Oh, you know, I don't mind a bit of virtual reality. I spent the time walking around the halls of CeBIT, which is a big business technology expo, about a year or so ago, and virtual reality was a standout there, and there was several different people showing it off, be it universities or even businesses who are making a big thing of it, and really got to sample some of the stuff. And it kind of made me want a little bit more, a gadget, for instance.
Yeah. Well, Geddes, now is your chance. The Oculus Rift are doing a summer of Rift. It's summer in America right now.
Summer of Rift.
Freezing here, but they're doing a summer of Rift promotion, and they've dropped the price of the Oculus Rift once again after an earlier price drop a few months ago. It'll now only cost you about 590 Australian dollars to get up a Rift from the previous $850.
Which is not bad, because, I mean, how many people would have been investing in the Oculus Rift as individuals when it was a lot higher?
Yeah, only like the select few, the hardcore people. But that was one of the things Rift really want to do with this. They want to sort of get their toy, their VR unit out into the market, increase their market share. They are behind the HTC Vive and the PlayStation VR, which have a bigger market share than Oculus, which is surprising because the Oculus Rift was kind of the first device that broke into the VR scene back in the day, and then Facebook took it over, and then they didn't release with the touch controllers, and the HTC had the touch controllers, and they took over. And a long story short, Vive are playing catch up, but what better way to do it than making the entry point to virtual reality so cheap and accessible to a lot of people? $590 for a VR system compared to the HTC Vive at current point in time, $1,400.
Definitely. If you're making your entry point a lot more affordable in a market that where there is several options and, of course, varying degrees of, good form in those options, and you're a reasonable sort of punt at it, a great way of really getting more of the market share is to actually reduce the price. But, you know, hopefully more people can jump into the technology and of course, more developers in the game as well, because you need those developers to build the content that we're going to enjoy if we do actually pick one of these up.
Yeah, my brother actually jumped on board. And he purchased one. So looking forward to having a bit of play with that when it comes, and you'll have to come over and then have a bit of play yourself.
I am going to come around and see what it can do, because
show you all the gimmicky demos.
I literally looked at demos when I was at CeBIT. I mean, apart from the University of Sydney actually had an active demonstration where you could do something, you could move around a bit of a scenery and like paint something and whatnot, which was it was a step more than what I'd seen. But, you know, it's all taking time. People tried to introduce VR in one form or another, you know, more than 3 years ago, and the game and the market wasn't ready for it. But now I think we're getting to a point where, you know, there are a lot of practical uses that we can use it in, and time is right. And if the hardware's affordable, we're going to go great guns with it.
Yeah, I definitely can't wait till it arrives.
Another big thing that has been making news, which you could connect with broadband technology, of course, with VR headsets, you need the active content and you need a really good internet connection to do so. And the National Broadband Network was, I guess it was pitched as being a way of improving internet connectivity here in Australia, but it's also had its problems represented as well in recent times. There's been a bit of a to and froing in the media between the National Broadband Network Company and also the Telecommunications Ombudsman telecommunications industry ombudsman when it comes down to who is at fault for slow internet connections on the fibre to the node network, which, of course, our government has been proclaiming they're at the halfway stage. Are you connected on NBN?
Yes, currently I got NBN at this household in sort of the central part of where we live. If you go sort of out a little bit further from the main city hub, you're kind of struggling and sitting around twiddling your thumbs.
Well, there's a lot of suburbs that do have it, but there are situations like the one I have. The not-for-profit organisation that I'm involved in, they've got it connected because they're in town. I've got the thing where we're a little bit off the actual road, so they look at things and just go, you can't have NBN, and there's no wireless tower out here at the moment. But for those who are on the fibre to the node service, some people have been getting a bit disgruntled because they've connected, they've seen a really good speed, and then it's dropped considerably, and they've gone, well, why is this the case? Basically, it stems back to the fact that each internet provider has to buy capacity in your local area, and some have essentially been skimping on it because they're not satisfied with how much NBN Co. has been charging for that connectivity. Now, NBN Co. justifies their stance because they say, well, you know, we're building this big network, we've got to pay back the money that we basically spent on it one way or another, and it really has to go back to the customer. But, you know, if an internet service provider is not going to pay it and pass it on to the customer and blame NBN Co., NBN Co., of course, is going to blame the ISP. So it's one big circle. So if you're in a situation where you are very close to a node and you've got connectivity speed issues, it might be down to your internet service provider. And it might be worth exploring some options online of providers who don't skimp on internet connectivity and, you know, skimp on spending that money to be able to provide that connectivity for you. You know, the options certainly aren't going to be there if you're a long way from your node to get a faster speed, because that's the physical limitations on cabling distance. But, yeah, choose your ISP wisely to have a good time on the NBN, I would say.
Yeah, and here's another thing. Depending where you live as well, the amount of ISPs available at your exchange might also be limited.
Well, no, it's not really. When it comes to fibre to the node, you've got a lot of options because essentially every company that is signed up to sell the NBN here in Australia can be accessed at your node. There's no limitations
really
like that. The only limitations you find in the NBN network are if you're on satellite, for instance. There are a very small amount of satellite providers in the country that can actually retail you the product. But if you're on wireless, a few more limitations. But on fibre to the node, your options are endless. A lot of service providers here in the country. So you just have to do a little bit of research online to find out, you know, differences in plans, differences in speed options. And also looking at other people's feedback online is also a good way of finding out which ISP is a good one to go for.
Whirlpool's a great place to do that.
Whirlpool is a fantastic place because you've got three groups of people. You've got the people who will sit and talk about several brands, the people who have had a terrible experience and tell everyone all about it, or the people who jump on and remind you why their choice was so great and how they've been doing the whole time through. And so you can put all of them together and sort of get an idea which ISP might work best for you.
Yeah, it's great. If you don't know what Whirlpool is, it's an online forum of people, a community dedicated to, they first started around four ISPs and internet service providers. So just Google Whirlpool forums and search away and you find everything you could possibly need on it. Now, Getty's, sometimes during the week, there are the big news stories that we sort of delve into, we expand upon, we might write an article about, and we talk about it on the podcast.
Yes.
Other times, there are just these little tidbits of information where the story's kind of in the headline, right? We have a little segment that we like to call Quick Headlines, and it's something we've been doing now for two seasons, and we're going to continue to do it because it's my favourite segment. So no matter what anyone says, it's here for good. And now we got something special for season three. I know we've talked about it many times over the weeks and years about coming up with a theme song, or an intro for the segment.
But there's
and
nothing
for the first
there.
Time, Geddes, we have a produced segment. You're going to play it now.
You're dreaming.
Wait, we don't have the theme song?
No.
I guess we
don't have high production values here.
I'll have to just do it then, I guess, from the past.
Okay.
If I can remember, it was quite a while ago, but I think it went something like this.
Okay, go for it.
These are the technology headlines of the week. These are the tech headlines of the week. Geddes, give me some quick headlines.
Isn't my line so easy?
I think it was like that, but we will work on it like an intro, right?
Sometime in the future. I think the intro to the show is going to be a bit more paramount than that, but we'll get there.
So these are some quick headlines that we'll throw back and forth between each other to just give you a bit of information, what's going on. If you want, you can research it later, but good luck. It's just in the headline. So here's my first one that might be interesting. eBay will soon let you shop using photos, right? So you see a pair of boots or sunglasses you like in the future they want to develop in the app. You can just take a picture of those boots and then it will pull you up those boots on eBay and then you can purchase them. So you might be wearing some shoes. I take a picture of your shoes. It pulls it up on eBay. I can buy them. That's pretty cool.
It's keywords, but going into the visual form.
Yes.
They're working
on it. So I'll keep an eye out for that in the next few months or so.
Yeah,
and we'll
definitely
see how well it works.
You know what, with the launch of the new versions of the Apple iPhones just months away, given where we're almost at August, Apple has finally looked at things and said, hey, you know, things have gone on since we brought the iPod out. We've slowly been phasing things out, but it's time for the iPod to go in its full form. So all of the main options for iPods are being removed from the product line. I think it's only going to leave you with the Apple iPod Touch and, of course, the iPhone themselves, which I think the vast majority of those people who are eating up this sort of technology are definitely using.
Yeah, here's the thing. Like, you have a smartphone, everyone just plays their music through that or streaming services. iPods are kind of going away, but having one device is kind of, it makes sense. But yeah, here we go. YouTube's head of music confirms that YouTube Red and Google Play are going to merge into sort of one service. Before they're two separate services, YouTube Red and Google Play Music or Google Music, and you subscribe to one, you get the other for free. But I think there were some people out there, they didn't realize if you subscribe to YouTube Red that you got Google Play Music installed, I mean, for a subscription as well. See, it's so confusing, I can't even say it. So, or vice versa. And because they're two separate apps, you would assume maybe they're separate, different, but they're all included in your Google account. Very confusing, as Google like to have a million apps, everything. So it makes sense, and about time, and I don't know why they didn't do this originally, they're looking to merge those two apps.
It makes sense for the people who probably weren't even aware of it, because, I mean, there's nothing that stands out that really you know, it lets them know that, I guess. Those users who are using PlayStation, and in specifics using the online PlayStation Plus platform, much like our Netflix conversation, they're actually going to have some price hikes in their subscriptions soon. They're looking at increases of $6 to $10 for quarterly subscriptions and definite $10 on your yearly subscriptions for the PlayStation Plus platform, which has only recently been announced in a matter of hours.
Well, there you go. I don't own a PlayStation, so
I don't own a gaming console as well. not a recent gaming console. I haven't had a gaming console since the Xbox 360 and also, I think, the PlayStation 2, which was a bit of a hand-me-down.
Yeah, we had a GameCube, we got a Nintendo Wii, and then a 360.
Oh, the Wii.
And that was kind of the last of the consoles for us, and then just switched to PC and never looked back.
Yeah, the Wii. I forgot about that one. Yeah, I sunk in about $600 for one of those things. It was shared funds, but, you know, where is it now? It's gathering dust somewhere.
Yeah, much like a lot of consoles. But PlayStation's still going strong, and they keep releasing them, so people must be buying them, right?
They definitely do. Someone's buying them.
All right, here's the quick last one from me. Airbnb. I know you've stayed with Airbnb a few
for
times.
Sure.
They will now let users leave reviews even if they don't complete their entire stay. Previously, you had to complete a stay to be able to leave a review. And the UK's Competition and Market Authority has come in and said, hey, what about if you rocked up to an Airbnb and it was not like advertised, or the hosts were rude and you had to leave before your full stay, you weren't able to leave a review to let other people know about that. So they're like, they're saying, let's make this a thing. Airbnb have complied and they're looking to make that change at the end of August. So now even if you don't complete your stay at a house, you can still leave a review, which I think is a good thing, right?
It's a good and a bad thing. It could be a bit of a worry if there's no limitations implied into what you can actually put forth, because there are people out there that just do things to cause trouble.
But I think you kind of got to make the booking first, kind of, don't you? So they'd kind of have your information a bit about it. So it's a bit hard to troll, but I assume you are. I guess there would be probably a few cases of people leaving reviews if they don't stay and maybe want to be a bit trollish. But, yeah, I guess that's it. Well, there you go. Quick headlines of the week, Geddes. Season 3, first podcast back. I think it went very well.
It went reasonably well. There's always room for improvement.
As always, and that's what we'll strive to do each and every week of this podcast moving forward. It's been an absolute joy and pleasure to be back, and looking forward very much so to future podcasts and continuing to write content for techwrap.net.
To great online content. The website is up. It's active. It's looking pretty. And you've been writing stuff. I've been writing stuff, and we're going to continue to do that. So while we're not podcasting, jump online to techwrap.net. Hey, you can email us, mail@techwrap.net, and we'll be able to see your messages. We'd love your feedback. And on Twitter, not Facebook as yet, TechWrap Podcast on Twitter. On the socials, only just.
Working on Facebook, though.
Yeah, having a crack at Facebook. I'm not very good at the whole, social media thing. I post quick bursts of my life, and that's about it.
Well, plenty more coming ahead, so stay tuned. And I'll see you next week. Geddes, an absolute pleasure, and I look forward to it.
I do look forward to it as well. Thanks for coming back on the ride.
Farewell.